Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Sky Masterson, the gambler at the center of Damon Runyon's Guys and Dolls, was based at least in part on Titanic Thompson, who was born in 1892 and flourished in Runyon's 20s and well beyond. But recognizing that nobody would believe the con's Thompson had actually worked, Runyon toned his fictional character down. In Titanic Thompson, the man who bet on everything, Kevin Cook tells the story of the fellow who could scale 52 cards under a door and beat you at golf right-handed and then turn around and beat you left-handed, not to mention marry 5 times and kill 5 men and live to be 81. When I had the opportunity to speak with Kevin Cook, I began our conversation by asking him how old Alvin Thomas, the boy who would become Titanic Thompson, was when he began beating family members out of their pennies at poker.
Well, he wasn't 10 yet. He was just about to become an elementary school dropout at the age of 5 or 6. Began taking his uncle's money in penny ante games, and that didn't make him very popular with his aunts.
As far as you could determine, did he cheat right from the start?
Titanic's philosophy from the very beginning was, if you can't beat him, cheat him. But he would rather beat you straight up, which he could do. A remarkable athlete, nobody was more dedicated to practice than he was. So his basic approach was, I will outthink you, and I will outmaneuver you, and if all else fails, I will cheat you. He had many possibilities, always something up his sleeve, and he really never made a bet that he wasn't quite confident he was going to win.
When did people start calling Alvin Thomas or Thompson Titanic, and when did he start referring to himself that way?
Well, he became Titanic in 1912. It was months after the Titanic sank. And Alvin Thomas was a young fellow moseying into a pool hall in Joplin, Missouri. After he had cleaned out everyone in the place, he asked for the proprietor, that was Snow Clark, and saw that there was a sign in the window that said, "Anyone who can leap over my brand new pool table gets $200. Well, young Alvin believed that he was capable of that. He said he could outjump a herd of bullfrogs. When they laughed at him, he turned and left. They thought he was upset. But Alvin comes back with a mattress he'd bought at a hotel down the way and sets it up on the other side, takes an Olympic-caliber jump with a flop in the middle over the top, lands on the mattress, collects his $200, at which point somebody says to Snow Clark, "What's the name of that young fellow?" And he says, "I don't rightly know, but it ought to be Titanic because he sinks everybody." Now, Alvin liked the sound of that a lot better than the sound of Alvin and became Titanic thereafter.
One of the more creative cons Titanic Thompson worked when he was still a child, about 10 years old, involved his dog as an accomplice. Would you explain how that one worked?
Well, his dog Carlo was quite a good accomplice for him. The dog was a great fetching dog, as he said. And this was really the first important scam that Titanic put over on someone, and it really showed his dedication to his craft even then. What he did was bet a dapper gentleman with a brand new rod and reel that Titanic really coveted, beautiful, expensive rod and reel. He bet him, "My dog is such a great fetching dog, I can throw a rock in this fishing hole, and he'll dive down to the bottom and get that same rock, bring it back. I'll bet my .22 rifle against your nice rod and reel." And the fisherman says, "Hold on a second. How am I going to know that that's the rock that you threw? If he comes up with the wrong rock, I'm not going to pay off." Titanic said, "Here, I'll show you what." He marks an X on that rock. Throws the rock in. His water spaniel, Carlo, dives in. Carlo bursts through the water, swims back over, drops the rock at young Alvin's feet, the rock with an X on it. The man says, "I'll be damned. I've never seen a thing like that." Pays off. Alvin spends the rest of that summer fishing trout with the fabulous rod and reel. And the man never found out that Alvin had spent the entire night before sitting by that fishing hole, picking up rocks and marking them with X's and chucking them into the water. The bottom of the fishing hole was really littered with those rocks. And Titanic would do variations on something that worked all out throughout the rest of his career.
You write that what drove Thompson was, quote, his compulsion to prove that he could beat any man at anything. At what point did anything come to include golf?
He was in his 30s already before he ever hit a golf ball. It was really more of a rich man's sport at the time. He happened to go past a driving range in the middle of nowhere and larruped a ball practically 300 yards with his first swing. He then wound up playing both left-handed and right-handed. The man was really a remarkable athlete whom Ben Hogan would later call the best shot maker I ever saw. A man who would probably have made millions as a professional golfer had he been born a generation later.
Thompson beat Ben Hogan, and he beat the rest of the golfers of his day, but he said that he'd never play on the pro golf tour because he didn't want to take a pay cut. Still, weren't the guys on the pro golf tour at that time, Sam Snead and the rest of those guys, constantly hustling each other? I'd have thought Thompson would have felt right at home there.
They were. He was a generation older than those fellows. He did meet Snead and offered to play Snead. He said, I'll play you pro. You know, a famous professional. Just give me four shots aside. And Sam said, well, I don't really want to do that, but why don't we play straight up and I'll play left-handed? Titanic says, I've heard of that one. And they pretty much made an entente. They agreed not to play each other. Didn't meet until much later. In fact, while those pro golfers at that time really did make more money on the side than they made in tournament winnings. One thing that Byron Nelson said was, you know, we were betting $100. Byron was a straight arrow, didn't do a great deal of betting himself. But Nelson said he never needed to play with us because when we were hustling $100, he was playing for $25,000.
You suggest that a lot of what Titanic Thompson accomplished as a hustler resulted from his enormous capacity for practice. Give us an example how, for him, practice made not necessarily perfect, but certainly rich.
Certainly, yes, and near perfect. He had so many scams that relied on the fact that he knew he could do something that seemed impossible. He was, for instance, fabulous at flipping playing cards, which he could do across a room, under a door, around a corner. Now, Sam Snead was another person who was great at that, and they make pretty good missiles. But one thing Titanic would mention, for instance, to offer a seemingly impossible bet, was I will clip off the flower across the room by the stem with a playing card. Now, a playing card isn't really heavy enough to do that, so he would strike that stem, then he would throw another playing card, and throw another playing card, each one hitting the stem at the same spot until finally it tumbled like a tree in the forest. And all you could hear is the applause from the other fellows. But if they're sporting at all, they laugh and pay up. If they did, as that first guy at the fishing hole didn't initially want to pay up, then they're going to be looking down the barrel of a gun, and they are going to pay up one way or the other.
Well, as you mentioned, looking down the barrel of a gun, Thompson allegedly killed five guys.
Well, in those days, you know, you can't go to the police and say, a heister just burst through the door and stole the piles of thousands of dollars that we were playing poker with. So you have to defend yourself. He was very good at doing that. He was always armed with his Colt 45, a fabulous shot. And one of the ways that Titanic deployed his knowledge of psychology, as well as everything else he could do, was that he knew that when somebody is going to shoot, most of the time, that person is nervous. And nervous people shoot high. So at the moment of truth, Titanic would instantly drop to one knee, spin around and fire. And he always figured that if the victims, those five men that he killed, if they were still around to talk to us, they would say they all deserved it.
According to your research, Titanic Thompson cheated Al Capone out of $500. He also hustled Arnold Rothstein, the legendary gambler and gangster who fixed the 1919 World Series. How did Thompson live to be 82 years old?
Well, he was smart enough to let Capone go with just that one little burn that he put on him. So he got out of town, got out of Chicago, went on to New York in a remarkable time during Prohibition in the late 20s, and actually hustled Rothstein. There was so much money in play in those days that it was 1,000 here, 10,000 there, and it wound up they played a poker game that was famous at the time, reported in all the newspapers, and it became part of the crime of the century, which was the death of Rothstein in a card game after Titanic double-crossed him.
at one point in his hustling life, Titanic Thompson is alleged to have said, "I famoused myself out of a good situation." What occasioned that comment, and what did he mean by it?
Well, it was a good point for him to understand. In his day, you could often go into a small town or even a mid-sized town, you clean every pocket, and you're out of there before word gets around. The police aren't in contact with each other from one city to another. By the time you get to the next town, you're as unknown as you were motoring into the first. But after the Rothstein case, after he double-crossed Arnold Rothstein, and this becomes a huge trial, one of the trials of the century in 1928, suddenly Titanic is testifying in open court in New York City in the case of the year. His picture is in all the newspapers. This was after Damon Runyon, who, of course, wrote the stories on which Guys and Dolls was based. Damon Runyon wanted to write Titanic's life story, and Titanic said, "Well, mine ain't the kind of business that publicity helps." So he turned Runyon down. Runyon was forced to fictionalize him into Skye Masterson, mm-hmm. the character that Marlon Brando plays in Guys and Dolls. But what Titanic realized after his picture is in all the newspapers with the headline "Unbeatable Gambler," that doesn't help you much when you get to Kansas City and the people at the local country club are saying, "Oh, here's the guy nobody could possibly beat." They tend not to be so eager to put up their hundreds and thousands of dollars. And like Sneed, they would say, "Hey, great to see you. I'd love to see some of your tricks," but they're not going to put up a lot of money against him. He famoused himself out of town after town, and there were fewer. Now suddenly the FBI is knocking on his door. Things became more difficult for him.
You write of Thompson toward the end of his life that, quote, "he had the aging athlete's conviction that he could still do everything he used to." Would it be an overstatement to characterize him at that point as pathetic?
I don't think he was pathetic, because he would still go to the local par three course and hustle $200-$300 off players who thought they were better than they were. At that stage in his life, it's very difficult for him even to hold a golf club. His hands are so arthritic. He's not playing full-length courses anymore, so he does go down to the local par three course. But his last wife, the last of his five teenage wives, accompanied him on some of those last rounds that he ever played on a par three golf course. And in the course of a couple of months, he made seven holes in one. She said, "It's astounding that you're still good enough at this game to make seven holes in one." And he shrugged and said, "Well, that's what I was aiming at."
Very late in the book, Thompson appears at the World Series of Poker in 1969. He was 78 years old. Everybody made a big fuss over him, but you end one paragraph with this sentence: "He left broke and nobody said goodbye." I wonder if that might have made a good epitaph for the guy.
Oh, it could be. There are so many good epitaphs in the world that he moved in. There was, when Minnesota Fats died, they buried him under a stone that said, "St. Peter, rack him up." and when the great Nick Dandelos, Nick the Greek, died penniless, as so many gamblers do in Los Angeles, the high rollers back in Vegas sent a hearse for him to drive Dandelos' coffin back to Vegas, where it's buried in Las Vegas, under a picture of a couple of dice, which is their pun on his destination, a pair of dice. Titanic, it's true that when he went out, nobody was around to say goodbye. I think he felt he had his heyday, and he did make a few more human connections later in life, particularly with his family.
Kevin Cook is the author of Titanic Thompson, The Man Who Bet on Everything, published by Norton. He joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Kevin, thanks very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. I enjoyed it a lot.
My conversation with Kevin Cook, the author of Titanic Thompson, The Man Who Bet on Everything, will be featured on this week's program. We'll also have the story of one of the more humble auto races ever staged, 24 Hours of Le Mans. Former NFL quarterback Ron Jaworski will help us try to understand why so many quarterbacks have either been injured, replaced, or both during the first half of the NFL season. We'll discuss with ESPN's Michelle Smith the women's college basketball season, and we'll have the story of one of the NBA teams trying to challenge the Lakers for supremacy in the West, the Oklahoma City Thunder. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.